Happy New Year to you. It's Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran on 720 WGN. You know Mike Rowe from his days as host of Dirty Jobs. He's the host of Deadliest Catch on the Discovery Channel. He is the host of the new Facebook show, Returning the Favor. His series, Somebody's Gotta Do It, is now airing on TBN. And he's the CEO of Mike Rowe Works. And joining us this morning to talk about the opportunities in the American workforce and the skills gap is Mike Rowe. Welcome back to the program, Mike.
Thanks for having me back, Dave. I assume I must have said something mildly cogent the first time.
You did. You did.
Good.
You won a second appearance. No, I appreciate it. congratulations, first of all, on the new series. I love it. And at a time where politics, our country, so divided, it's a great show celebrating those who help others.
Honestly, thank you. And for the first time, maybe not the first time, but, you know, Dirty Jobs in a lot of ways was a mission-oriented platform proposition more than it was a program. You know, I was just kind of Forrest Gumping my way around the country looking for people who weren't afraid to get dirty.
Sure.
This came out of the same kind of idea that I'm just feeling like people don't care about shows anymore in terms of plot and character and all the normal stuff. They're just tired of, you know, going into their news feeds and seeing themselves unfriended by people they thought they'd be pals with forever.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
no,
turning
totally
on the table. And
yeah.
I mean, it's just a bloodbath out there, and people are, the country's sad. This is a nice, happy show. I mean, do you really want to be left, with respect, you know, knowing a real housewife a little better? they're just, I mean, it's a choice,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
But, you know, for me, honestly, the second most important thing, along with doing a show that didn't make people throw up in their mouth, was doing it in a way that didn't feel overly manipulative,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and toward that end, really what I pitched Facebook was, let's do a making of a feel-good show, about a feel-good show. Let's just throw everything onto the screen. Because a lot of the producers, you know, the guys I'm working with on this thing, they've all done their time in traditional reality TV. And the truth is, they want to do something different.
Yeah.
And they want to do something that's, you know, kind of decent. So far, I mean, it's been the feel-good hit of the summer.
But everything you've done, though, I feel is that way. I really do. I do feel that way. Like, the Somebody's Got to Do It, the Dirty Jobs. You've always kind of taken that approach. And I think that's why those shows that you've done have been so successful and so engaging for the viewer.
Well, look, thanks. I mean, it's not so different in your industry, you know, in radio, in publishing, in anything. The kinds of shows and the kind of people I find myself drawn to more and more are people who seem to be primarily doing whatever it is they're doing, not to amuse me, but to amuse themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, those people are typically in on the joke, whatever that is. And so, you know, with Dirty Jobs and with this show as well, I just tell the people around me, look, think of your friends, think of your family, imagine sitting with them and watching whatever it is we're about to do. That should be how you feel. That
sure.
You should have the freedom to say whatever fool thing pops into your mind that you would say if you were watching with your pals, because that's ultimately where you want to be, right?
Yeah.
You want to be with your friends.
Absolutely.
All we really try and do at the end is surprise them by doing something, giving them something that will allow them to do more of what they're already doing.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's, you know, it's more gear, it's more equipment, it's a better garage, it's a better looking garage. And of course it's publicity, because what Jason really wants to do is take Operation Combat Bike Saver,
expand that,
and see it pop up in Cleveland and
yeah.
Akron
yeah.
and Dallas, you know, and
yeah.
Baltimore, and why not?
Yeah.
Facebook is it's David, this is such a different world. I mean, if I got 2 million people watching Dirty Jobs, or 500,000
yeah.
watching Somebody's Got to Do It, the network would send flowers and we'd have a small parade. you know, we're
yeah.
reaching
yeah, you
millions
are.
Of people overnight.
Yeah,
it's a kick. The crazy thing for me, you know, I've been very transparent with the 5 million friends I have on my page. And about 6 months ago, my mother wrote me this letter. It was one of the funniest things I'd ever read, so I immediately read it out loud and posted it. And 62 million people have read it so far, or watched it.
Yeah, right.
I think, I can't prove it, but I think somebody over at Facebook looked at that and said, you know, the guy is sitting at his kitchen table telling me a story and 60 million people are watching. Do we really need, you know, to spend Game of Thrones money to get a decent show on the air? I mean,
yeah.
do you really need
yeah.
to go that far underwater? The answer is, of course you don't.
Yeah, Exactly. Well, stick around. There's more on this New Year's morning with Mike Rowe after a look at your morning traffic. Dave Plyer and for Steve Cochran this morning. Happy New Year to all of you. We are talking to Mike Rowe of Dirty Jobs. Somebody's got to do it and returning the favor. Mike, you're a guy that's always looking at the American workforce, and there are no insignificant jobs that exist out there. In fact, and this always gets me, you even started in a different career as an opera singer. That's always my favorite story, because anytime I've shared it with somebody, anytime I've when I've shared the interview that we had about a year and a half ago, everyone's like, "Wait, what?"
Look, it's really interesting to me. When you look at how hard it is for people to get their heads around cognitive dissonance today, it didn't used to be this hard. You know, like a well-rounded person was not a surprise. And I'm not suggesting I'm well-rounded. Maybe I'm just schizophrenic. But but if you juxtapose a lot of the images out there of me crawling through sewers or dangling from, you know, the Mackinac Bridge with a guy, you know, singing an aria from Puccini, it does not compute. But, you know, it doesn't compute either if you look at, really, the most important gig I ever had was selling crap in the middle of the night on the TVC cable shopping channel.
Right.
I learned everything I needed to know about this ridiculous industry at 3 a.m., you know, talking to a couple million narcoleptic lonely hearts. And so there are no insignificant jobs.
Nope.
And the most interesting rungs on the ladder, I bet if you look back at your career, too, you can identify jobs, people, moments that seemed completely insignificant and maybe even a little embarrassing at the time, but in hindsight, put you on the path that took you to wherever it is you are today.
Oh, I'll tell you, one of my first gigs was working for the music industry, for Musicland, Sam Goody, remember record stores?
Oh, very well.
But really, my first job was working for my town's water and sewer department, and I built creek beds with railroad ties and painted fire hydrants. And you're right, there is no insignificant job, and I think that's one of the big things out there right now is everybody has this view of what the perfect job is. And I just want to segue a little bit to this cool foundation you have called Micro Works. And it's, you know, it's the relationship with work, the widening skills gap. You award scholarships to students pursuing a career in skilled trades, which brings me to this unemployment and skills gap. So in the U.S., we have a record 6.2 million job openings. It's the highest number since the Labor Department started tracking this in 2000. At the same time, there are 7 million unemployed Americans, and that's almost one job for every person searching for a role. But the skill gap proves that opportunity alone isn't enough to find the right job.
That is as good a synopsis as I've ever heard of why I do what I do with this foundation. The first reason, you know, is simply to address the portion of the country who's come to the mistaken conclusion that opportunity is dead. The skills gap, you know, is not a political issue, but it becomes political because it highlights an inconvenient truth. And the truth is there is a ton of opportunity for anyone willing to learn a skill that's in demand and go, and I don't want to minimize this because it's not like all the jobs exist in equal part in every zip code, you know, fairly. They don't. You have to go to where the work is, but, well, isn't that always been the way? But if you look at the skills gap as an indicator of something else going on in the country, that's where it really becomes interesting to me. So the legacy of Dirty Jobs, to the extent that it has one, is an attempt to close that gap by rewarding a combination of work ethic and competence that everybody I met on the show possessed and every business owner I met on the show cried out for. Even at the height of unemployment, you know, the height of it in 2009,
sure. Right.
Everywhere we went, the only sign I saw was help wanted signs.
Well,
and that's amazing, and it's no different today.
And you think about, you know, when I was in high school, I mean, there was vocational technical training that's taken out of the high schools now, so we're not even really providing those opportunities to learn a trade at an earlier age. And although we'd like everyone to think differently, college isn't affordable for everyone, and it might not be the right path for everyone. But we don't early enough in kids' lives give them some different opportunities that they may not see.
We tell kids what's valuable by the way we treat everything around us. So what is a logical kid to conclude if you take the vocational arts out of high school? The grown-ups don't value it. Why in the world would he or she? And by the way, it's interesting. You know, vocational arts is what shop used to be called.
Shop,
and,
right.
You know, the first way you get rid of something almost always is to arbitrage the art out of it. So the vocational arts simply became VOTEC, and VOTEC simply became shop. And shop was easier to remove from high school than anybody imagined. So we don't elevate the kinds of jobs that are critical to civilized life.
Absolutely.
We don't celebrate a whole category of our workforce, and yet we're surprised because a generation later, we can't seem to recruit people into those jobs. And at the same time, of course, we've loaned over $1.3
trillion. College. Right.
For a four-year degree.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I got one. I'm happy to have it. But, man, we're still lending money we don't have to kids who can't pay it back to educate them for jobs that don't exist anymore. And that's kind of bananas. We're, like, talking right past each other on a national level. And it's really interesting that there was a couple of months ago, there was a conference or a summit or something where the president said, you know, we're going to bring these jobs back. And all the CEOs kind of looked at each other and said, look, Mr. President, we already have the jobs. We can't find people to do them. And it's a subtle but massive disconnect. And for whatever reason, it still doesn't make its way into the headlines nearly enough. I appreciate you asking me about it because that's, you know, to the extent that I can move the needle, that's exactly where I try to.
Yeah. And you wrote, and I'm following on Facebook, you wrote a letter first to President Obama, and I saw it, and this is months ago or whatever it was, but, and then you literally kind of took that letter and scratched out the name President Obama, put President Trump in there because it really was the same issue.
Not a damn thing
unaddressed.
Except it got worse, right?
Yeah, and right.
I started MicroWorks on Labor Day in 2008.
Right.
And I wrote a letter to Obama right after his inauguration where he talked about 3 million shovel-ready jobs. And I said, look, I'm not an expert, but from what I'm hearing and from what I've seen, you're going to have a much easier time selling shovel-ready opportunities to a country who has a positive relationship with the shovel. And right now, I think that might be broken. So I essentially wrote the same letter to Trump. I just crossed out Obama's name and crossed out 3 million and put in $1 trillion of infrastructure spending. And he saw it, and I wound up getting invited to D.C. and once again beat my shoe on the table and yelled at Congress.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, you push the rock up the hill and see what happens.
Yeah. What's your overall vision for this then? Is it taking some of that money that we were going to put into the infrastructure and actually put it toward training people who want jobs and that don't currently have those skills? I mean, what's your vision on this?
Well, my optimistic spin on it is that these things always course correct. It just takes time and it's messy and it's very uncomfortable for a period. But I think more nationally, we're just going to have to wait while the companies who ultimately get the bids are able to train a workforce. It's not, you know, it's bad, but it's not dire because, you know, if you're a fan of history at all, you know, you'll recall the Second World War and you'll recall the speed with which the entire country had to figure out not only how to build B-17s, but fly them.
Right.
And, you know, we can do it. You know, we just need some sort of existential reason. And bridges falling down is not war, but it's up there. You know, floods are up there. You know, when that was really the thing about dirty jobs. It was to get people to think, look, this is a fun show and we're having a lot of laughs, but you have to ask yourself every so often what happens when all the plumbers call in sick for a week, you know, or the electricians, the steam fitters, the pipe fitters.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, unlike most other vocations, which would cause problems, this, you know, is riot. This is, you know, end of days stuff. So we either tend to our workforce or we pay the price.
Well, he's Mike Rowe. His show, Somebody's Got to Do It, is on TBN. And you can catch his latest series, Returning the Favor, on Facebook. Mike, Happy New Year to you, and let's talk again soon.
Dave, anytime.